Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Late Night Poets Break On Through Show. We are part of the world's largest community. It's on poetry.com, and there you can find us, the Late Night Poets. And tonight is Break On Through, as you just heard Jim Morrison. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Faziana tomorrow, and she teaches you how to be a part sinner, part saint. Then Monday morning, check out Victoria Frost, as she features the hearts of LNP. Tuesday, we dig into the likes of Morrison and Bukowski. Wednesday, join Neutron as the After Midnight Bomber. And Thursday morning, delve into a world of strange magic with Incoherent Dust and Victoria Frost. These shows are designed shoot and call outside the lines of rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. And Pam, how are you doing?
Well, it's been a bit of a long day, but, you know, the end is in sight. The kids go back to school on Monday, and I'm going to be here hanging out with you and the cool poets reading and commenting on poetry. So, you know what, this moment here and now, it's all good. And I know what, you know, the word you're looking for Neutron's show is cathartic edge. That's what she always says in her contest. Prompts with
I know that, but I like the thought of join Neutron as the After Midnight Bomber. That's a nice ring to it.
Well, the name of the show, is, after, has something to do with that. Yeah. Late Night with Midnight Bomber or something like that. But her, the type of show she does is usually to do with however you pronounce that. But, yeah.
Cathartic.
Great intro there. danger there. And how are you doing?
All right.
Yeah.
Wet again.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of be expected this time of year. We actually got a little bit of snow the other day, but thankfully it just melted right away. And but yeah, we've had the same thing, that cold, damp weather that makes you just not want to do anything. Yeah, so Jaren, tomorrow I got to try to take Jaren out because he's getting restless, but, you know, that's understandable after about a week of being indoors. But, well, enough about me and you, because we've got people to bring on and poetry to read through. So I'm going to start bringing on our guests, and here we go. All right. Up first, we have Lynn. Welcome, Lynn. Glad you could join
us.
Hi.
Hello, Lynn.
Nice to be here.
Excellent.
And then we have Salwa. Welcome, Salwa. Glad you could join us.
Hello, Pam. And Rax. Hello.
Hi.
It was nice listening to you, actually, talking a little bit about you.
you're so nice. We're just a couple of old, boring people who talk about our weather and our aching bones and all that. So. And here we have Catherine. Welcome, Catherine. Glad you could join us.
It's good to be here, Pam. And
hey, Catherine.
Hi, Rex. Hi, Pam. Yeah.
Hi, Karen.
Well, Rex, it's your show tonight, so whenever you're ready.
You got to post something first.
That's a good point. All right. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to post Saul's poem, and then I'm going to mosey over to the studio and push play on your SoundCloud. And so here we go.
Rupture, une rupture. I love you, but I left. I would like to start with my love to be read by your distant eyes. The only thing I'm sure about this late hour is that I love you. Yet we hardly knew each other, never met face to face. Our long exchanges pacified my heart. A chance to meet, the fate has stolen it. Love suddenly took me down a path I'll never take. An invisible shadow separated us. Love you, I love your humanity, your hidden tenderness. I know I would have made you the happiest man. I would have given you my love, my purity, my whole self, my life. And you, would you have loved me with an immense love? I was eager to know you more than you were eager to know me. My fears and my weakness you didn't like. Anguish, if not understanding my anxiety, hurt my heart. Your imperfection, I understood the roots and accepted them. I regret that I left you quickly. Really, I love you, surely you know. My heart loves you, love never born. It's true, I'm shy. However, my heart desires that you eyes in flame make me blush for real. My heart still loves you, and you resonate in my dreams. When the river will flow, I will feel lonely, my desires will hunt me, my ailment will weigh me down with sorrow. I will close my eyes and remember, I will let the rain wash my pain. In the mountain, bury my tears at his foot. Je t'aime, mais je t'ai quitté. Je voudrais commencer par mon amour, pour être lu par tes yeux lointains. La seule chose dont je suis certaine à cette heure tardive, c'est que je t'aime. Pourtant, connaissant à peine, jamais rencontré face à face, nos longs échanges m'ont paralysé le cœur. Les chances de se rencontrer le destin à la volée. L'amour m'a amené soudainement sur un chemin que je n'ai jamais pris. Une ombre invisible nous a séparés. Je t'aime, j'aime ton humanité, ta tendresse détachée. Je sais que j'aurais fait de toi l'homme le plus heureux. Je t'aurais donné mon amour, ma pureté, tout mon moi, ma vie. Et toi, tu m'aurais aimé d'un immense amour. J'avais hâte de te connaître plus que tu n'avais hâte de me connaître. Mes peurs, mes faiblesses, autant plus guère. L'angoisse de ne pas comprendre mon angoisse me faisait mal au cœur. Ces imperfections, j'ai compris leurs racines, je les ai acceptées. Je regrette de t'avoir quitté trop vite. Vraiment, je t'aime. Certes, tu le sais. Mon cœur t'aime, un amour à jamais né. C'est vrai, je suis timide. Toutefois, mon cœur désire que tes yeux enflamment me fassent rougir pour de vrai. Mon cœur t'aime toujours et tu résonneras dans mes rêves. Quand la rivière coulera, je me sentirai seule. Mes désirs me hanteront. Mes mots m'alourdiront de chagrin. Je vais fermer les yeux et me souvenir. Je laisserai la pluie laver ma douleur. La montagne enterrera mes larmes à ses pieds. End of poem.
Great read, Sawa, and thank you very much for that SoundCloud. Ooh. Lynn, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
Wow. Awesome performance. Wow. I understood the French, thank you, thankfully. It was awesome to have both back-to-back. I'll start with the English. The English was read the whole thing was read very, very softly, and it just played my heart like a violin. It was unbelievable. I was trembling. It was so soft and heartfelt is an understatement. It was so endearing, and you just felt every line. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Thank you so much.
It was wonderful to have the French right back to back, and the French was read very differently. Tone was like louder and more, and the music was a little louder too, like as far as the performance of it went. It was more, I almost feel like saying like passionate, but it was stronger. It was like the English was like very gentle and soft, and most of the French was the tone was different, and so it totally gave the same wording and message, but in a totally different way. So it was really awesome to see how different both could be, and then the French got to being soft, like it was for the English. Anyway, but as far as that's just the performance part of it, the wording was so genuine, just from the heart, and without guile, you know. It was just beautiful. I loved it, and I'm adding it. Is the SoundCloud attached to this? Yes, it is. I'm definitely adding this to my favorites this very second. Oh. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much.
Love it.
That's very
Thank you.
Nicely said, Lynn. Thank you.
Great performance.
And Catherine, how about you? Catherine, are you there? Maybe we lost Catherine. All right, Salwa.
I was on mute.
Okay.
Okay. I just love Salwa's poetry, and I love the way her delivery is. And I agree. I the French was so powerfully emoted, and I think French is the native language for Salwa. So she's able to really express herself a lot more, I think, in that language. But, of course, the English was so, there was a spiritual aspect to it and a longing and a sense of how do I express this to the person I love. This is a tremendously powerful, very beautifully read, very emotive love poem, full of longing, and very well done, Salwa. Thank you,
Catherine. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Catherine. All right, Salwa. I got to say, I love the fact that you've gotten more expansive. This is a nice lengthy piece from you. You've opened up quite a bit, and it comes like almost a love letter itself, because you start with, I would like to start with my love. So there's that opening to a letter, so to speak, and the fact that you never met, but it doesn't matter. There's such a longing and a sadness, but it's not that sadness that's hard-edged. It's that one that kind of tugs at the heart, like the girls have already said, and I agree with everything that Lynn hit on with this. And I love the piano as you had in the beginning of this. It was nice and soft and played well with your voice on the English end. But I too do like what you chose for the French end. The tempo sped up to feed into the language and the read of that language throughout the French angle until down near the end, it got soft again. The tempo got reduced to that point on the last couple of stanzas where everything was coming back to that point where you had with the English end. And I don't know what piano piece you picked, but you picked two good choices for both ends of this piece. They worked very well together, and this was extremely expressive and heartfelt.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And Pam, it's your turn.
All right. Yes, I absolutely think this is amazing. And I have to say that, although sometimes I know I overuse the word heartfelt, in this case, it is genuinely meant, because it is such a difficult decision. And even when it's just, whether I don't know if this is a real experience or it's a made-up story, but either way, it is an experience that has happened to many people where you realize that the relationship isn't working out and you have to walk away while you still love the person or they walk away, but whatever happens, and what I like about this is it's so human, so emotive. You don't, the voice in this poem, the first person narrative voice in this poem does not act like they are completely confident. They go back and forth. They have their doubts. I regret that I left too quickly. Really, I love what you, surely you know. And it's that kind of that ache of thinking to yourself, did I try hard enough? What more could I have done? Should I have been more patient? Beautiful read and write all the way through, and very well done.
Thank you so much, Pam. I appreciate it. You always like nail it in your writing. Yeah, yes. And everyone, thank you so much. I'm really touched. Great topic.
And
it is a letter, written like a letter. Sorry, you're right, you picked up on the track. It's written as a letter. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right, I'm going to be quiet.
Okay.
Okay.
No, we like having people talk on radio shows, you know, because, well, if they don't talk, we're just dead air, so, you know.
Yeah, we can't have dead air. It wouldn't go over very nicely.
Exactly. It doesn't look good on a radio show. But, all right, Lynn, I have put up your poem titled My Curious Zone. So go ahead, give it a read for us, please.
This is another hard act to follow. Because mine's a totally different tone.
I'm sure it's
you because
we always have it.
My Curious Zone. Round and round in my square box, routine ever so predictable, till literally it closes in, stifling and unbearable. Itching to stretch my imagination, stimulate my curiosity, go see what's out there, rub elbows with innovators, stir up a cauldron of ideas, dare set afire passions. What if I really did get out of my comfort zone and let a sense of adventure overtake the whole of me? What if? End poem.
Great read, Lynn. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get the lead off.
Well, I think you followed that last act just perfectly. I really enjoy your style, Lynn, because you say exactly what you're thinking, you know. You and I like the whole tone of this as the what if, you know, the question at the end really supports the entire poem. You know, that it's the whole idea of stepping outside of your own box and seeking fulfillment beyond what you are currently existing in. You know, trying new things. You know, spreading your wings. Going on those adventures. Sometimes, you know, like some people are very much homebodies, you know, and there's definitely nothing wrong with that. It's a wonderful thing to feel secure and know you have the security of the comforts of home. But, to be able to get out there. And what is it that there's that quote, I can't, what is it about, you know, the difference of between people? There's people who talk about ideas and people who talk about people, and you want to get out there and you want to be the person who talks about ideas. You want to learn new things, and I think as a person and as a poet, that is always important. And as I said, your straightforward mannerism just always makes me smile. So this is very well done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. And Salwa, how about you?
Oh, I really love Lynn writing as well. It's very precise. You can't, like, it takes you step by step exactly what's in her mind. As you said, Pam, it really is true. And I like how this one, the wording is also very particular. I like round and round in my square box. Literally, I can visually see you, like so visually, going around and around, thinking about when someone don't know, they kind of there's hesitation here. But then you get out of this uncomfort, and you have this itching, not like itching, this not only stress, but so want to get out of your head, this imagination. You just want it to happen. They won't leave you alone. That's so beautiful, the word itching. Stimulate my curiosity. Go. I like all of this innovation idea, but the one that really got my attention there, set a fire passion. It's not only about ideas, I think also about sentiments and feeling. Go and maybe love again or experiment a new life. What if I really did? What would happen to get out of my comfort zone? Just like literally talking to yourself. And I like that as well too, and ending with what if. Would be just to hold you. It's beautiful. I really enjoyed it. It's so truthful. That's what I like about it. You tell us a little bit about who, what, you know, your desire and your wishes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Salwa. And Kathy, how about you, Catherine? Sorry.
Oh, you could call me Kathy.
Okay. Round and round in my square box, bouncing off the walls. It's a poem about imagination, but it's imagination that is going to bring about results. You know, that's what I sense from it. You know, you just really have the sense that this is not a poem about just dreams, but it's about wanting to make those dreams a reality, you know, and bringing new ideas into practice and into being, and you know, stimulating yourself intellectually, maybe reading new books, or you know, doing things that are going to bring you out of yourself. And that's what I got from it. You know, this is something that you really want to do and not just talk about. You know, and that was my sense of it.
Good job, man. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm going to mute myself because of all the background noise.
Okay. All right, then. I'm going to hit on that open line, too. Lynn. Round and round in my square box. I agree with Salwa on that thought. But also, I look at it another way. You offer up that motif of a round peg in a square hole, that hamster wheel that keeps going around, that motif you offered up in that first stanza. Imbues the thought of being locked inside oneself. There's a touch of fear, although it's not heavy. It just offers up the touch, but the notation. Then you hit on the next sort of itching to stretch my imagination, which comes with actually getting out and about. And still, you offer that touch of fear in that second stanza. And then you hit on the what if I really did get out of my comfort zone. So you've hit on the round and round in the first, and you've got the stir up a cauldron of ideas in the second one, so you still got that circle going. And then again, you hit the circle again with what if I really did, and then what if to finish. There's still that circle going, and the thought of getting out of your comfort zone is still fearful, but you've left the last two words as an open-ended, not a question, but an open-ended thought, what if. So you haven't fully given in to the fear, and you're still open to the possibilities of making that next leap past that fear to actually enjoy that which you want in the second stanza, which is to spend time with people on a conversational tone that gives you pleasure.
Thank you. Yes.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
All righty. I guess Sam's already got something up for us for me to read. Okay, yes, we do. There are no reasons, only seasons, by Joseph Moon. Oh, love. Since death took thee to thy rest, there lives an ocean in my chest. Seismic waves wash away the seasons. Breathless in sorrow, I search for reasons. Was heaven so starved for a lamb as hell the lusty bull or ram? Each spring I see God in his glorious shroud. Each June his jocund image of a cloud. As November leaves die, he visits my slumber. Pains on pains no mortal may number. Like a leaf I fall into December days, and there he sits in dawn's dulcet haze. With thee there in the sunrise light, I cannot touch thee by thy light. Blooms the ocean where we live. End poem. And Lynn, why don't we kick it off with you? What'd you think?
I love the
the two lines the best. Seismic waves wash away the seasons. Breathless in sorrow, I search for reasons. I thought that was very rich. I love those two lines the best. They stood out for me. I thought it was, I like the way the first line is just, oh, love. And then the title's great. There are no reasons, only seasons. I thought that, yeah, I think the title's very, like, meaningful. I love the title. It's a beautiful poem, and I love the rhyme scheme. Love it. Wonderful.
Thank you very much, Lynn. And Catherine, how about you?
It's got almost a Shakespearean feel to it. You know, and I agree with Lynn in that there are really no reasons. There are just seasons. There's different times in your life. And it's not just the seasons of the year, it's the seasons of life, you know, and just perhaps wanting to break out of that pattern maybe of, you know, just reacting to different things. Actually, I've got to admit, I don't have the poems in front of me. I have requested them, but I guess Pam didn't get my message that I would like the links. I'm no longer on late night, although I'm going to request to get back on. But until then, I don't have the links in front of me. But I that's what I got out of it, was that it is a desire to go from one part of one's life into another, which is not necessarily what one would expect. I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay. Thank you very much, Catherine. And Salwa, how about you?
This is very moving, and I agree it's very elegant in the style and wording. It just has this classic touch, always almost Shakespearean. Breathless in sorrow, I search for reason. This is really powerful. Like almost like my poem where I'm searching and try to understand. It's a little bit different. He tried to understand why this is ended, why this love is dead for reason. And I love the image, was heaven so star for lamb? Remind me of the sacrifice that has to sacrifice my love. That's what the idea of, I think, heaven so star for lamb. And, just so many imagery that you can go on forever, like a leaf in fall in December. There is the sunrise light. I cannot bear the light. There is this yearning and the distance that separate. You feel it there, feel the ocean where we live. But there is still hope. There is this remaining of the ocean of, okay, like for me, ocean is like memories that hold so many things deep inside. It's very powerful, right? Very, very emotive too.
Well, absolutely. Thank you, Salwa. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, as always, this is absolutely beautiful. I love the rhyme and flow. The beginning stanza really sets the tone with the idea of a loved one having been lost to death. At least that's what I get from it. And where it says, breathless in sorrow, I search for reasons. And that's, you know, when someone dies, and especially when they die unexpectedly, you often do search for reasons. I have to agree with Salwa that the metaphor of the ocean and the chest was absolutely brilliant, and that the couplet is wonderful. And the thing with the couplet is, to me, I see it as, and I'm going to say that I see this as a man who has lost his wife, and that he sees his significant other, the lamb that heaven wanted, and because he's now going through his own personal hell, he sees himself as the bull or the ram that hell wanted. But I like how this difference, he uses the actual nature seasons to represent the different seasons in life, and how throughout each one of those seasons, there's both the struggles and the joys that we go through. So excellent right here and very well done.
Nicely said. I like the duality in this. Yeah, it does hit on the thought of death in the first, and you get that couplet that hits on the thought of death too, but this kind of walks the grandiose thought of a little bit of depression and how seasonally it might affect us. Each spring I see God in his glorious shroud. In June, his jocund image of a cloud. And then November leaves, die. He visits my slumber, pains on pains, no more to remember. There's that thought of going into winter knowing. Then he hits on that thought in December, the dulcet day, a haze, the sunrise light that he wishes for, which would signal spring again. So there's that thought of rolling through the season and how it might affect one on a material level, and that the ocean fills the ocean where we live. Is that thought of the heart itself, the ocean in my chest, the thought of being of having a full heart in the moment. All right, Pam, back on you.
That was well said there, Rex. And let me get back to Late Night Poets and put in the next. Did I get the next one? I think I did. All right. And, okay, let's try this. Oh, there we go. Okay. Up next is Of Mice, Comments, Internet Intellectuals by Rob Cohen. And we do have a SoundCloud for this, and I'm also waiting for the link to post. It's being a little slow. Oh, did it go through? I think it did. It did. Okay. And mosey on over and push play on the SoundCloud, hopefully. All right. Here we go.
Of Mice and Comments, Internet Intellectuals. Bizarre Life declares, rarest male is the one who lives with crocodiles, while the Lenny fan mockingly taunts, you ain't never seen a dog in a dolphin suit, have ya? I can't argue with either, but how I ended up in the abyss of this pissing contest in a YouTube comment section is the biggest mystery to me. Backtrack. Scrolling Zoom lectures on urology led to the darkest corners of this godless portal. R.I.P. Mother Mary. No mother is safe in that place, and hate doesn't cease or stop to discriminate. Ask Big Dick 888. Still buttered that the 666 variation was claimed by another random edgy 100-pound 12-year-old. Beta lobsters with dirty rooms at the base of primary school hierarchies. You swear on video titles of bite-sized philosophy, unable to digest solid information, never mind animated nihilist summaries, which seems a fairy tale in the shade when compared next to this depressing Gen Z existential nightmare. Digital pens are softer than balloon swords, mythical events closer to truth than comment section views. Top shagger armed and loaded with his aka QWERTY keyboard, Mr. Worldwide, boasts of his exploits with frauds at home and abroad on foreign shores, waxing lyrical in his tell-all autobiographical 50 shades of things that never happened while I surfed the World Wide Web with my mouse in my hand. Stop the World and Let Me Off, Suicides by Anti-Vax, Serpentong, Owned by Facts and Logic, I've Died Online for the Last Time, Catch Me on the Other Side of the Nile, Like the Aussie Khaki Nature Guy, I'll Be Catching Rays, The Beastly Beauty, Crocodiles.
Great read, Rob, and thank you very much for SoundCloud. That was wonderful. All right, Pam, you get to toddle off the first one.
What's that?
You get to toddle off the first comment.
Oh, absolutely. I love this one. It won gold in a contest I ran. Unfortunately, it was a really small contest. There was only 4 entries, but that's not completely everybody's fault. It just I had to end the contest early because I had to start a new one, and I didn't really need a whole bunch of rights. But so he placed as gold. He had led into a couple of song prompts, and he met the tone of them really well. But my generic comment was that I very much enjoyed this write. It was about the craziness of the internet, where everyone is an expert on everything, and we can too easily lose our deeper self. And that to me is true. I mean, some of the most like Rob comes across to me as fairly calm in personality and very intelligent. But even those of us who won't necessarily, like the arguments, we wouldn't think of starting in a grocery store. We will start on the internet, or we will get, not necessarily start them, we will get sucked into them. So pretty soon we find ourselves with fisticuffs with the morons of the internet. And, what I really like, this has such a biting edge to it. I can't argue with either, but how I end up in the abyss of this pissing contest in a YouTube comments section. And if anybody has ever looked at the comments section of YouTube videos, it is completely filled with idiots. This had a bit more of I wouldn't say his poetry completely lacks bite, because it doesn't, but to this one had it bit deeper. It really took some punches that, I felt like, even though it wasn't in rhyme, because, one of the songs that you wrote to was actually a rap song, and I feel like the wordplay in here and the verbal punches thrown very much fit with that style. And, of course, keeping with his own unique way of using imagery to make his point. Top Shatter Armin loaded with his AKA QWERTY keyboard, Mr. Worldwide. That was just clever humor and very well done.
Oh, thank you, Pam. And Lynn, how about you?
I love the alliteration and the flow of certain lines. Like, one that really stood out for me was I just loved a dog in a dolphin suit. It's like it's not a long alliteration, but it's like it's punchy. I really like that one. And he starts off his poem I'm not gonna pretend that I understood everything. there's like a lot of imagery and references. His first word is bizarre, so he sets the tone right off the bat. So, and I love the reading of it. Was like he had like a mood in his tone, and it really complemented the poem perfectly, and. I call it a reference. I don't know if, we don't know if he meant it, but I like the 50 Shades of, the 50 Shades of Grey pops to mind, and it's just nice to, make reference without like without really referring to it, but it just sounds good. And he's, yeah, tons of like vivid imagery that is very effective for sure. I liked it.
Well, thank you very much, Lynn.
And end of comment. Oh.
And Salwa, how about you?
Oh, I love Rob writing. He's just incredible brain. I agree with you, Pam. I'll give him the gift of pen and brain. I like how he put in the copy-pasted comment. It made me smile seeing this in his before his wording. It's really hilarious. Internet intellectual is like ironic. I said satiric a little bit in his poem here. There's so many, like the, even the you ain't never seen a dog that doesn't suit, have you? I really wanted to laugh. Like it's making fun of people who, I guess, I don't know if that's what he means, but like you something you don't know about, or you dress, you pretend you know, or something like that. I think that's what he's trying to say here. See a dog in a dolphin suit. It's just hilarious. There's so many lines that express what you said very well, Pam, about this. I agree with you. It's crazy. And it happens in AP too, unfortunately. I had to block a couple of people who put stupid, like, rudest comment. One guy told me, when you speak English, I can read your poem. I don't understand your English. I couldn't believe it. Like, rude. I'm not kidding. I just, like, what? That's so mean. anyway. Stuff like that. There are people who just want to be, I don't know what's their intention. It's just weird. Bizarre, as you said. Unexpected. I love the imagery. I love how the digital pen has softer than balloons, words, mythical event. There's this irony and satire in his wording to make fun of it. It's just incredible to show not necessarily what you said, idiocy. I don't want to say idiocy, but really that's what he's trying to do. And I think it's very clever, and it makes you smile. There's so many of them. Oh, catch me on the other side of the Nile. Incredibly. But usually when I read his poem, it takes me a long time to really grasp it, and my head hurts from thinking so hard. I really enjoy his writing. Incredible potential he have, young and just born to write.
Oh, as you said, Sala, thank you.
Yeah.
Catherine, how about you?
I love the way he uses the forward slashes and the X's and, you know, everything to do with the internet. He, the little underline between the words and so forth, it's very effective. And his turn of phrase is, I don't think I know a poet really who can deliver that kind of a turn of phrase that he uses. He is so good at that. Top Shagger, armed and loaded with his AKA quirky keyboard, Mr. Worldwide, both of his exploits with blogs at home and abroad, waxing lyrical in his tell-all autobiographical 50 Shades of Things That Never Happened, while I pierce the world wide web with my mouth in my hand. That is just priceless. So I really like his work. And, you know, catch me as I'm lying in the beauty of the catching rays and Aussie and nature guy. I just love this poem. This is great. Thanks.
I forgot to say how I really like the RIT, or Mother Mary, no mother is safe in that place. I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Struck me too. Sorry, I just had to barge in there. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. You guys you're absolutely right in everything. I got to start with the title of Mice and Comments, Intellectuals. That comes right with Mice and Men and the Internet Intellectuals. Yeah, we ain't having none of that. Now that first stanza, he hits on the crocodile thought, and then he throws in that line of humor. You ain't never seen a dog in a dolphin suit, have you? Actually, I have seen that picture, so I understand that motif. Now the thought that he rolls in with this, you're right. This is literally digging deep on everybody that goes on the internet who think they're supreme intellectuals and actually know nothing about anything and offer up these stupid comments like this ass big dick 888, still butthurt that his 666 variation was claimed by another random edgy 100-pound 12-year-old. Wow, that is a slap in the face. The sort of beta lobster with dirty rooms. You talk about little boys in basements in their mother's and father's house, bite-sized philosophy, unable to digest solid information. Let me see what else you got. Oh, that thought with the that AKA QWERTY keyboard, Mr. Worldwide. Now that was cool. Somebody's quick fingered on the keyboard, but has no intelligence to actually offer up anything. That 50 Shades was a wonderful tale in offering up the internet porn without actually digging into it. He hints again with the crocodiles. Like the Aussie khaki nature guy, I'll be catching rays with the beastly beauty crocodiles. There's that nice note to Steve Irwin, who played in nature with all the animals and died in nature with a stingray, which actually caught him in the chest with the barb on their tail.
Yeah.
So it goes right back to that thought in the open, the rarest male is the one who lives with crocodiles. Nicely done, Rob. All right, Pam.
That was a wonderful comment, Rex. I kind of figured you'd enjoy that poem. And, you're right. There definitely takes a lot of hits. That's all the idiots who think they know everything. But up next is Morning Light by RSD. And it goes like this. The waning voice of the hills means no great loss. Tepid pools collect dew, spew mist into morning mizama of the new of dawn's breaking on the reddened horizon, riddling bracken and heather with dappled rays of gold. Within this fevered world of promise, I struggle to find a lasting path forward. No whispering wind points the way, no guide awaits, adorned in shadow. Each step shall be my first and my last. Forging a sacred road through the fractured landscape, birds flutter in my wake, flummoxed by invasive noise. Clouds tie the nascent sky in knots, pulled taut the string of cirrus streaking through the hemisphere blue, too early for their cue, too thin to bless the earth with rain. They lack the muscle of thunderheads, which pummel dust into mud, impregnate sun-drunk flowers with sun pollen thistles, limp petals shaped into bell-like goblets to catch the flow. I have left behind a lifetime of riches buried in the past, obliterated into oblivion, hidden underground with the dead, who count wealth and opportunities miss windows to recreate the possibility of victory with the simplest toss of the dice. With the winning card tucked safely away in your hand, I am no gambler, but I thrill to the endless chase for glory. Everything depends on its radiant flux, how it enlarges the self, how it rises above the mundane, sharing in the grandeur of the gods who frolic in the lowly human flight. Our heroes begin as flesh and bone, Hercules, Achilles, Odysseus. Who will call on them to savor our triumphs? Who will fly to our aid when Apollo turns his back? None can say nor dare invoke the Delphic oracle.
we fight alone, mired in the finite, craving the infinite. Oh, mercy without end, when will you come? When will we die in the edict of the eternal, the present everlasting need now wholly human? End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Salwa, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
Let me check. There is a chance. Sometimes she does have to. Salwa did have to.
Okay. All right, Catherine, why don't we start with you?
Okay, I'm unmuted now. Oh, wow. There's so much to this. I don't even know where to begin. I like the way it's broken down into sections, you know, one, two, and then he has these, I like the last stanza the best, I think. No one can say nor dare invoke the Delphic Oracle. We fight alone, mired in the facade, craving the infinite. Oh, mercy without end, when will you come? It's very deep, obviously. But, you know, he talks about the tepid pools collect dew, spew mist into the morning miasma of the new, of dawn's breaking on the reddened horizon, riddling bracken and heather with dappled rays of gold. That is such a beautiful way to invoke the morning. And the alliteration, everything about it is just, it's a wonderful poem and very, very well done. Thanks.
Thank you, Catherine. And Lynn, how about you?
I thought the imagery was very rich, and there's a lot of I want to say emotion, but it just felt like there was a lot of emotion, but really, he's not talking about emotions. It just evokes a lot of, I don't know, reaches in anyway. The rhythm and the flow is fabulous. Some of the line breaks were very surprising, but I don't know if anybody else noticed that. Like, for example, in not so much first one a little bit, the first part, so the third stanza, the last two lines, petals shaped. Okay, that's one break. That's a little surprising. And above that, they lack, and then the muscle. It's so different that, well, you don't see that often, breaks like that often. And the second one, there's more, like the second stanza of the second part, how it enlarges the self. And there's a lot more on that, like our heroes began. Okay, that one's not so much. The third line from the bottom, oh, mercy without end. That's a nice pause. But it's like a super short sentence in the middle of like lots of long sentences. It's just like noticeable, but it's beautiful. Yeah, I just love how his lines are like there's a lot of symmetry, and then I don't know what to say about those line breaks, but they just stand out. End of comment.
Well said. Thank you, Lynn.
Anyway,
and
I love
Pam.
The poem.
Sorry. And Pam?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. This is absolutely beautiful. Wow. First of all, I have to say that when Lynn used the word evoke to refer to the emotion, it just definitely was a spot on there, Lynn, in your comment, because you're right. He never specifically says an emotion, but he knows the right imagery to choose to evoke those emotions within the reader. To me, the general idea that I got from this was that, the idea of leaving behind the rat race and to kind of finding that spiritual strength and appreciation of nature, kind of delving into the simplicity. What's intriguing to me about this is that it's a mixture of, the mythology, the Greek mythology, but almost has a pastoral feel to it. Like, it almost has a Thoreau-type feel to it, real clever ways that he described the flowers and the clouds. And the other thing is that on a metaphorical level, if you look at the clouds, like when he says, sun-drunk flowers of sun pollen, thistle and petals shaped in bell-like goblets, there's something about that that to me represents greed. There's something that to me speaks about the greed of human nature, which is within the way those flowers are described. Wonderful imagery all the way through. And then the question at the end, that kind of that search for self and, what, instead of being busy searching for our heroes, we should find that kind of that hero within ourselves. But that's just my analysis. But a wonderful light. Very well done.
Great comments, everybody. I think that opening line kind of says it all. The waning voice of the hills means no great loss. There's kind of a note to death in that thought. And it kind of runs with that, this feeble world of promise. I struggle to find a lasting path. And the whispering wind points the way, and you'll guide away to dawn and shadow. Each step shall be my first and my last, forging a sacred road through the fractured landscape. That kind of speaks of a graveyard. So he's either strolling through a graveyard or he's on his way to that graveyard. And the thought with the heroes kind of hits me with the thought of, where is he? He hits on, I have left behind a lifetime of riches, buried in the past, obliterated in oblivion, hidden under the ground with the dead who count wealth and opportunities miss. Windows to recreate the possible victory, the simple thoughts of dice, winning card, tucked safely away in the hand. I am no gambler, but I thrill to the endless chase of glory. So there's that note there at the loss, either loss of everything or really enjoying that. But now there is nothing to enjoy in that because he is. And the thought with the gods, Hercules, Achilles, Odysseus, Apollo, the Delphic Oracle and all that, it comes to the thought of the offering in the last two lines with the questioning is, who will be around less the voice that I ever stood foot upon this land? All right, Pam, back to you.
That was very well said there, Rex. And up next is Where Are We? By Pink Fairy 5. And Lynn, would you give that a read for us, please?
Oh, my goodness.
You can do it. You have a wonderful voice.
Yeah, I just had to bring it up there. Oh, boy. Okay. Where are we? We don't care who you dance with, they said, but you can't be prejudiced or homophobic about it. Wait, I yelled, looking up from my sociology book. I thought we were going to the home for the deaf. My classmates howled with laughter
That's when I saw the barbed wire. Where are we? I screamed. Suddenly, caring enough to listen. You have volunteered to dance with prisoners at a social experiment. I got up early on a Saturday for this. You better listen in class, my busmate teased me. We both laughed. They brought them in all together. Mr. Teacuphead, man half a bone, woman wearing a flesh bustle, invented hat man, Mr. Squirrel Tail. I gave them instant nicknames, trying to keep my mind off being killed. Thanks a bunch, I told my roommate that night. You knew where we were going. She had sat way up front in the bus, careful not to make eye contact. What are you griping about, she asked me. Mr. Squirrel Tail stepped on my foot 63 times. Man with half a bone kept trying to kiss me, I told her. We were both really lying. No one liked us. Oh. Aw, that's cute.
Great read, Lynn.
That's
thank you very much.
Very unlikely.
And Catherine, why don't you start us off? What'd you think?
Well, once again, I don't have the polls in front of me. So I love what he talks about. Naming everybody on the bus, Mr. Squirrel Tail, and the lady with the flesh-colored bustle. I just love the humor in this. But as I said, I don't have it in front of me, so. I don't want dead air on the show, so if you could move on to the next comment, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Pam, how about you?
I really enjoyed this. Some wonderful twisted humor. I like how she took that abstract painting, she made it into a story. And as I've mentioned before, there is humor in here, but it's humor used to talk about some very social issues like prejudice and homophobia. And then I thought it was very clever when she brought up the prisoners. You have volunteered to dance with prisoners as a social experiment, because there actually was many social experiments done that wouldn't get done nowadays. And one of them I remember I was watching a video about was they basically set up a prison in the basement of a college and had people arrested, and part of the half of them or so were given treated really well, and the other half were not. And basically, these people ended up like being pitted against each other. So, the whole idea of are we allowing ourselves to become a social experiment? Are we allowing ourselves to be turned against each other? And they're like, man with a half a bone kept trying to kiss me, that half a bone thing, that just feels like a really fun jab there. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Lynn, you got to read. How about you?
Okay, well, there's lots of imagination here. I thought it was a crazy scenario, but like crazy imaginative. I'll use imaginative, a super imaginative scenario. Tons of humor, like a different kind of humor. I love the last two lines. We were both totally lying. No one liked us. Like, they went to a prison, and two girls, like, hello, as if they wouldn't like them, you know? that's more humor. There's just no, you know, no way. And, you know, they sound young and sweet, you know? Like, how can anybody not like them? So it was very entertaining. Yeah, very good.
You're right, it was different. Dark and pithy humor. It takes a bite at sociology because one of them who was actually in the class wasn't paying attention, so was unprepared for that which was coming up that day, which offered up the biting note with the classmates who actually were paying attention, knew where they were going. So the thought is, you know what, you can run a social experiment, doesn't mean the other side doesn't know what's going on, and things don't always walk the normal route of that which you think, because people react in the moment to their surroundings and how they're being treated in that moment. And when you've got sociology students coming in who really don't understand sociology to begin with, and one who wasn't paying attention in the first place, things kind of take a different turn. And yeah, no one liked us. Well, one was laughing, and one didn't know where she was going to begin with. So already the day started off on the wrong foot. Is sociology students.
Yeah.
All right, Pam.
Bravo, Rex. Absolutely, that was a wonderful observation. And up next we have Abacalus Abolia. I probably butchered that title, but by Luke J.R. And Rex, will you give that for us, please?
Abacalus Abolia, Luke J.R. Smudged charcoal stretched across a canvas called My World. Gray shades engraved in the once white-black space between us. Unusual shapes formulating shadows of mystery within the charcoal lines. What do you see? An observer approaches me. There's nothing there. I don't see anything that it could possibly be. Our third eye has the tears to cry, deny the unwoken eye. Follow the lines to the entangled times of forgotten war crimes. Helicopters spin, propel into air with oxygen untamed, unfair, funfair, funfair, funfair. There's shadows everywhere. Smudged charcoal stretched with outlines of mystery, history. Grayish shades of every withered tree that you can find. There's a haven within the mind of this disturbed, she signed. Perhaps four lines are redundant as the eyes watch every word. What you see, an observer woke me. There's nothing there. I don't see anything anywhere. Our fourth eye is riddled, not forged from a lie. Deny the fourth eye. 50 eyes, thousands, millions, billions. There's more currency to lock away your history. Within a safe force from pencils that have become blunter than my shape. Stretch the eyes over the canvas, a world full of lies meant for the flies. Smudged charcoal? Stretched around the face of existence. Dimensions, changes, does it even make a difference? End poem. All right, Pam, off you go.
All right, well, first of all, that was a wonderful read. I have to say that I like the background that he chose. I don't know if you can see it on your phone, Rex, but it honestly looks like if you see pictures of the back of the eye and you see the intricate details of all the veins and the nerves behind the eye, that's what his background picture looks like. And so I think that was a wonderful choice. And, this to me, it's just a powerful writing. I've always enjoyed Luke's writing. He always has great alliteration, inner and rhyme, wordplay. And, what I particularly like what I'm seeing here is, and it's a technical thing, and just my personal taste is the fact that he's separating the stanzas to allow that kind of pause between the thoughts. The general idea I get from this is that there is a lot that we are blind to, especially, you know, the whole idea that there's only a small percentage of the human brain used, and we don't reach our full potential. And when it comes to almost like on a spiritual level, that our third eye has the tears to cry, deny the unwoken eye. It's like this cry to, like, wake yourself up. Our fourth eye is a riddle, forged a lie, deny the fourth eye. And I find that intriguing. I've never actually heard of the reference to a fourth eye, so I would have to read more about that. But the fact that it seems almost be like a declaration, you know, that obviously to deny it, makes me wonder which voice or point of view he's coming from. Is it the point of view of saying, yeah, well, you don't want to see what the fourth eye offers? Or is it the point of view of, you know, mocking people who don't want to? The use, 50 eyes, thousands, millions, billions, that makes me think of, who is that? Carl Sagan, you know, with the famous scientist. And so, I don't know, I feel like near the end, it kind of balances, there's a very philosophical edge of that balance between nature and philosophy, and a world full of lies meant for the flies. I don't know, I'm just intrigued, and absolutely some powerful and thought-provoking imagery, and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Lynn, how about you?
I love how he introduces the theme of my world, that the whole two lines, first word being smudged, and it's repeated throughout the poem. he says the great, because he's talking about charcoal, smudged charcoal, and gray shades engraved into the once black-white space between us. I thought that was a strong two lines to start off his poem. And I really thought that he sort of thrust this line all of a sudden. I thought, just before he says, our third eye has the tears to cry, deny the unwoken eye, follow the lines to the entangled times of forgotten war crimes. So it's like, whoa, okay, like, you know, it's pretty in-your-face imagery there, for sure. So, I thought that was great, and I also was taken aback with the fourth eye, so I don't know about that too. Fourth eye is a riddle forged from a lie. Deny the fourth eye. So that's like a lot of internal rhyme. That's an awesome line right there, yeah, for sure. Yes, that's all I have to say for first read.
Nicely said, Lynn. Thank you. And Catherine, how about you?
Well, once again, I don't have the poem in front of me. Salwa was sending me the link, but she's not on anymore. She had to go to bed. So I'm just going to say good night. I can't. If I can't read the poem, obviously I can't comment on it. So thank you all, and have a beautiful evening, okay?
Good night.
All right. Good night,
Catherine. Good night, Catherine.
Well, I'm going to go with Lynn. You pointed out that those opening couple of lines. That's where I want to go, my world. And then the gray shades engraved into once black-white space between us. The black-white space is important. There used to be a thought to the normality of black and white, how we read things. You notice what that is. It isn't the separation between colors, so to speak. It's the separation of knowledge, understanding, and gray shades kind of hits on that thought. Everything is being blurred into a singular animation, which kind of points there is no space anymore, because instead of understanding what that concept is, with black-white being the understanding of self and the things that are around you, they are so shaded now that the truth is no longer within those lines itself, which I thought was a clever thought. And he hits it elsewhere, too. Perhaps four lines are redundant as the eyes watch every word. Now, there's a thought there kind of hits on not reading between the lines, so to speak, because it also hits on there's lies in this. In the following down, stretch the eyes over the canvas, a world full of lies meant for the flies. So everything's gotten shaded to the point where the lies are continuous, so it's all gray area, that there's no delineation between the truth and honesty and what is being fed out. And there's much charcoal stretched around the face of existence, dimensions, changes, does it even make a difference? And the answer is yes, because if there's no delineation between the black and white possibilities, because everything is shaded, then you don't know truth to begin with. All right, Pam.
I like that, Rex. Well said there. And The Fourth Eye is actually a book on spirituality. I didn't read a whole lot about it, the concept of the fourth eye does exist. So, excellent comments, everybody. All right. Up next is One of Spirit by Pam Aide, and it goes like this. I, one of spirit, know experience depths below floor. Though we're great only in our belief in ourselves, I owe an ox's snort to you, or revelations of love, dead art, sustained learning, looking to define many 40 or more experience peaks to have each mood's heart with such much clarity, always once skin's feel of it, vibrations after the fall. Are we that? Are we historical treasures yet? The world beyond you undulates, revealing life beyond human. Rest thirsty, tired inside. Have the depths of the ground sang a wailing song. Years of raped qualities, worlds less than wonderful, all too well, no man. Your depths of this know is the truth. It's you, mine is a lie. And point can I know. I know hard equally to soft. Go mysterious. Why heights being is something unusual that happens to everyone. Covering would have known hidden souls or some of them. You never know. Many things mimic the living. Thick with mine, heavy and want, soullessness bears to skins and grasps flash. Your aggressive flesh hides within cascading nature's oceans. Hearts lived in the science of the higher mind. We own our differences, depths, a perceptive to cover the beyond. From the summit, our unshakable heart. And poem. And you know what? I say Rex should just comment on this one first, and we all just say, I agree with Rex.
Well, shit. All right. Let's see. I'll start with the top. I, one of spirit, know experience, depths of floor. There's that sort of falling, and the experience in the fall, or being buried on the floor. Though we're great only in our belief in ourselves, I owe an ox's snort to you, or revelation of love's dead art. There's a thought of pain in that, maybe being treated illy by someone. Sustained learning also points to the angle too, looking to find many clarity, always wants, and the skin feel, there's always that, always historical treasure set, there's the thought of wanting, needing. Then the thought, the world beyond you undulates. There's a possibility of moving out of that bad angle. Thirsty, tired inside, the depths of ground sang a wailing song. Then years of raped qualities. That kind of points to put downs. Less than wonderful, all the same way. To you, mine is a lie. And point, what can I? There's a thought in this that bites at the being put down heavily, and then the question of am I real, so to speak, soullessness, heart's rhythm is tied to the higher mind, we are our own differences, depths, acceptance, cover the beyond, and some it kind of hits me on the thought of wanting to own that which is me, even though that I have been placed in a less and better world than I am, I still want to grow out of that since I am moving on. That's the best I can do. So it's your turn.
Well, you do realize that this is your show tonight, and you could have just said, no, I'm in charge. But I have to say, I really enjoy listening to you think out loud. You know, I am glad you did comment first. This is beautifully written. One of the things about Pam H. poetry that I appreciate, and it's actually one of the things I appreciate about your poetry too, is even though you two have different styles, there's something very similar in the way your noun verb order or something. You know what I mean? Like it's you understand what's happening. But it's the way the words are rearranged it becomes its own unique language, and I see that within Pam H. poetry, I really like everything you had to say. I would say that in general, to me, I get the idea that this, you know, is someone speaking to either an individual person or to mankind in general, someone who kind of has walked away from, as you were saying, you know, you mentioned put-downs. You know, it's almost like somebody who walks away from people who are damaging emotionally, spiritually, who have a very negative energy, and they walk away from that, and they find themselves within a more uplifting state of mind. And I really like where it says, have the depths of the ground sang a wailing song, years of raped qualities, worldless and wonderful, all too well-known man. What I feel like that touches upon is how over time so many people have lost respect for nature. The destruction of the land without conservative efforts to the point where we lose that connection. I felt there was kind of that. There was a certain bite to this of the many things mimic the living. I feel like that touches on the idea that, you know how you just had that Chris Cornell show with that song, you know, you give me life, teach me how to live. And I feel like that many of us go through that act of just getting by, but not really living to our fullest potential. And so that song comes to my mind when I read lines like that, because it's one thing to just walk around and do the things you're supposed to do. It's another thing to go beyond that. Depths of perceptive to cover the beyond from the summit are unshakable hearts. There's definitely a strength of character and of knowing oneself, within this rite. So excellent rite and very well done. Oh,
and Lynn, how about you?
What's that?
And Lynn, how about you?
Oh, Lynn is gone, actually. It's actually for the last half hour.
Okay.
Just me and you, which means I actually will put up the next poem and give me a moment here. And I'm pretty sure the last half hour we're not going to have anybody else call in. But, of course, you know, if anybody wants to, they're more than welcome to. All right, up next is Squiggles and Wiggles by Poetic Creation. And Rex, go ahead.
Squiggles and Wiggles by Poetic Creation. Wiggling up through higher dimensions, color fades away from the artistic palette, replaced by shapes leaping off of the canvas like a watch spring, empowering the chaos, and the graceful continuity of time that effortlessly slips by the living, pushing every one of us to manipulate the matter, to encourage happiness beyond mere contentment, to look beyond simple shapes as we are coaxed to reach out, to touch, to feel the whole color, and to embrace every squiggle and poem. All right. You're up.
All right. That was a great read there. I like the title Squiggles and Wiggles makes me smile. I don't, it makes me think of the name of the grocery store, Piggly Wiggly, back in like the 80s. I really thought that this was a wonderful write on expanding the mind, and I like this short line, by shapes leaping off of the canvas like a watch spring, empowering the chaos and the graceful continuity of time that effortlessly slips by the living, pushing every one of us to manipulate matter, to encourage happiness beyond mere contentment. I really like that, the whole idea of, you know, don't just be content, be exquisitely happy, to look beyond simple shapes, to touch, feel the whole color, and to embrace every squiggle. Like, you know, I mean, and that's, yeah, I remember, like, my maternal grandmother had, like, as I mentioned before, she always had artwork in her house, and so many of it, much of it was very surreal, very Dadaism, very, like, untraditional shapes. You know, there was also stuff that, you know, used the, like the cubism, the squares. But I think when we look at not only art itself with the potential, and I like that he focuses on the squiggles and the shapes rather than just fully on the color itself. And that if we take that approach that, you know, life is fluid, you know, that the potential and possibilities of things that we can accomplish in life are fluid, you know, we're really opening our minds up. So an excellent brevity and very well done.
Well, this kind of hits me as getting out of the doldrums, color fades away, is that sedentary life that you've wrapped yourself into without possibility of beauty. And the sort of leaping off the canvas like a watch spring and power in the chaos. Getting out and doing something. Because you got that next one down. That definitely slips by the living. Those moments you're not enjoying because you're living in the doldrums. And then it's on the last one. A touch to feel the whole color. There's the great thought right there of go out and smell the roses.
I like that. And you're right, it does have that feel of trying to get yourself out of that kind of state of depression. And, like you said, go out and smell the roses. So, very well said. And up next, we have The World Won't End by Tunya BJC. And it goes like this. The world won't end without me in it, as the memories of what once was will have their limit once there is no more us. For the ground on which we stand is weak, breaking away, for it's unstable. Safety and shelter we constantly seek. However, sometimes things crumble and we're not able. The world won't end without me in it. Love can only last if given a chance. I'll stand tall, but there is a limit with unforeseen circumstance. For the ground on which we stand is weak, breaking away, for it's unstable. Safety and shelter we constantly seek, but sometimes things crumble and we're not able. Winds of pain and battle scars pound the flesh and soul, like meteors crushing the stars or burning embers in the coal. End poem.
Great read. All right. And it hits me on things don't die at the end of things. It's just a matter in the moment, in the knowledge that one moves on because the ground on which we stand is weak. Fight the safety and shelter sort. Things crumble. So there's a notation of understanding. The quality was not there, nor was the thought of something stable to begin with. It's built on lies or maybe just need. Your turn.
My turn. So, that was an excellent comment. I think you're right. There is something about that you know, it's like on the idea of the lies. But let's see. Well, first of all, I have to say there's some wonderful rhyme and flow in this, especially in that last stanza. I mean, that last stanza could be a poem in itself, and what I think of is that quote where it says the bird feels safe on the branch, not because it trusts the branch, but because it trusts its own wings. And I really get that feel of this poem is the whole idea that, you know, the ground you stand on, you know, and the ground being metaphorical, you know, the circumstances, the people, the places, and, you know, especially people that you trust in your life, you may find at some point they're not as trustworthy as you thought, and in which case you then have to depend on yourself. I also, now where I feel like the kind of the lies thing came in that you mentioned was where it said, I'll stand tall, but there is a limit with unforeseen circumstances. You know, I feel like, you know, there's almost this idea, and I don't know if, you know, why I get this idea, but it's the whole idea of putting your neck out for somebody and saying, you know, I'll stand up for you, but, you know, there's only so far I'll go, you know, especially once I find out you're lying. Wind, pain, and battle scars pound the flesh and soul like meteors crushing the stars or burning embers in the coal. I don't know, that's just so poetic. I can't get over that last stanza. I'm sorry, but it's just, it should be a prompt for a contest. That's, you know, but it's a beautiful write all the way through. And I really feel like it's just that idea of trust yourself. And, you know, so very well said. And I guess it's back to me again since I'm the one posting links. So I guess I can't toss anything back to you. All right. So I will go ahead and I will post the next minute. I was hoping Wayne was going to call in and read, but I know he's been really tired lately, and, you know, it's not always easy. So we'll go ahead and have his poem read. This is Trying to Be Real, Not Abstract by Wayne Gent. And go ahead, Rex.
Okay. Try to Be Real, Not Abstract by Wayne Gent. Out of med bed, I cannot sleep. Inside my head, thoughts are deep. All the promises did not keep. I'm too strong, will not weep. Can't think straight on my back. Hard to get up out of the sack. Wish I could find my right track. Why is everyone wanting to attack? Who am I? I am unknown. Hanging around, being alone. Try to think, who is that on phone? Need advice, I am on my own. Hardest time is late at night. Stay confused, wondering what's right. Go outside, someone wants to fight. There is no future in my sight. Can't decide where to go. Just because I said it, don't make it so. Who are my friends? I don't know. They keep trying to put on a show. When I leave, usually late. Don't know why I hesitate. Need to get better. Cannot wait. Think of good. Try not hate. Need to add, not subtract. Look at light. Get out of black. Think what's real. Avoid abstract. Try to be me. That's a fact. End quote. Well.
All right. There we go. Great read there, Rex. You know, as always, Wayne is a wonderful rhyming poet. You know, I liked it. The title is very fun because it was a contest, you know, that had to do with Dadaism, which is a form of, you know, surrealism abstract. And so it almost, to me, that the title pokes a little fun at the idea of abstract, you know. And I liked how this has that kind of, like, search for self feel. You know, and that's what I said. It was an excellent write on the search for self and the struggles of not knowing. And I like that it has the questions. Who am I? I am unknown. Hanging around, being alone. Try to think, who is that on phone? Need advice. I am on my own. You know, the whole idea of searching for answers. And nowadays we have the internet. But unfortunately, even trying to find answers on the internet, because everybody has an opinion and they can vary so widely, it's not always easy to find them. So just a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done.
That's because you've forgotten. Everybody, like assholes, like opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one and they all smell the same.
Exactly.
But this is kind of hit sort of reality and falsity in the same thought. Out of my bed, I kind of sleep inside my head. Thoughts are deep. All the promises did not keep. I'm too strong, will not weep. There's conflicting back and forth. Can't think straight on my back. Had to get up out of the sacks. We're right back out of my bed, now into bed. And then again, the hardest time is late at night. And then where to go? Usually late, and then the back end of it. Need to add, not subtract. Look at light, get out of black. Think what's real, avoid abstract. Try to be me. That's a fact. There's that yin yang thought, the opposite, and everything has a dark side, light side. One opposite the other, and one is the addition, one is the subtraction, so to speak. And the abstract angle he's hitting on. Think what's real, avoid abstract. There's that thought there of questioning oneself to the point that it becomes abstract and not offering up the falsity as opposed to the reality of self.
Well said there, Rex. Well said there. And all right. Let me see that. Go and grab the next poem. That is the question. And no, I did not. Let's try this again. All right. And I think those were all the carryovers from the Break On Through 312. And the Break On Through Song Contest. So now we're actually the last two or so, three writes, depending on how many we get through, are going to be from Twisted Tuesday's Inner Light show. So go ahead and let's see here. And up next is The Soul's Journey by Nan529, and it goes like this. Forever rowing, traveling across the river Styx, unable to reach the banks of the underworld, my soul yearns to enter Hades. I feel lost, repeating the same journey over and over again,
this is my punishment from the gods. Splash, splash, splash. Rowing, rowing, forever rowing, unable to stop. No flesh, no muscle, no tissues, all gone, just my old bones. Yet my mind and soul is trapped within my torture. I want to scream, Zeus, forgive me, please, forgive me. Splash, 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 rowing, rowing, forever rowing. For time moves on, yet for me nothing changes. The water splashes, yet I do not move any closer. To enter Hades, lay down these oars, to place my bones on the earth, I am denied. Will this reoccurring nightmare never end? Splash, 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 rowing, rowing, forever rowing. The gods will never forgive me. Enjoying my torture, drinking their goblets of ambrosia. I am their muse, watching me whenever I am close to the shore. Zeus turns the tide, forcing me to row the other way. Rowing, rowing, forever rowing in this endless journey. Will my misery never end? End poem.
Great read, ma'am. Well, it sounds like a really bad dream of being lost everywhere. On the other end, it also sounds like you forgot to pay Charon. There was no coins on your eyes to offer the ferryman across the River Styx. So on that end, you are the one that journeys that river ever, 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 because you fail to pay your way across to the other side.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, it did have that feel to it. You know, I like the use of the Greek mythology. It actually very much reminded me of Sisyphus. Isn't that the one who pushes the rock uphill and then Prometheus or the guy? Sisyphus, you know, isn't that his name? The guy who has to push the rock up the hill, and then the boulder, and the boulder rolls down, and then he has to push it back up. And this is like his eternal punishment. He's actually used as a symbol for the philosophy of absurdism. But anyway, it reminds me of that. It reminds me of that story there, and I'm pretty sure it is Sisyphus. I could be wrong. I like the idea that how she made this into like almost that eternal torment that the having to do something over and over again. And to me, I think what particularly added to the torment of it was, you know, and added to the strength of the poem was the repetitiveness, and was also the whole idea that there really was journey, no end to the journey. And I think that's where your thought on the paying Charon. Yes, that's it. And that's where that comes in, because when you pay your toll, you know where you're going. You know the journey is going to end. And here we have no end in sight. And that really just adds to the feel of the poem. So I really like that. Very well done. All right. And up next is Transcendence by Zan VB, and go ahead, Rex.
Transcendence by Zan VB. Arms spread wide, chest pushed forward, head held high. In that very instant, accepting transcendence, utter peace comes to a standstill. Conversations with the flame. Nothing else will cure it. In a breath, the universe will swirl. I'm blessed, high in the pines, sculpted of iron. Nurturing comes alive when I'm among the trees. songs of simple truth, poems for my silent solitude. Thirst swims in invisible rivers. I close my eyes, then open them again. The first light, clearly in sight, I grasp home after wandering in the wilderness. And poem. Your turn.
Great. Tagrick. I really like this. First of all, Anne writes some of the most beautiful brevity. And I like that she fits, like this piece of artwork here, this sculpture is titled Conversation with the Flame. And so I like that she fit the title of the artwork into it. And I like that because with this artwork, with the one of the things that the person was trying to accomplish, the artist, was to show the connection between the inner light and the physical body. And so that she starts out with the physical description, you know, the arms spread wide, chest pushed forward, head held high, which is very much, like if you're ever at a church service and when you do the offering up of the collection plate and you raise your arms and, it very much has that feel of, really, it's a stance of opening oneself up. And so I liked that. And I'm blessed high in the pine, sculpted of iron nurturing, comes alive when I'm among the trees. To me that really speaks, you know what, it's a beautiful poem. I'm sorry, Rex, can you go ahead?
Me, this hits on, especially at opening up, is that thought of giving oneself over in the moment, understanding that which you're accepting and moving into. There's a spiritual aspect to it, which hits on knowing where you are, who you are, and what you're giving into, and understanding that which comes with it. Conversations with the flame, nothing else with cure, and the breath of the universal swirl is that note of purification. High in the pines, sculpted of iron, nurturing comes alive when among the trees. High in the pines, there's fresh air, sculpted of iron, being part of the earth, because that's where the iron comes from. Nurturing comes alive when among the trees. There's that thought of tree growth being rooted in that which you are accepting. Songs of simple truth, poems from my silent solitude. Knowledge of understanding when to be silent and when to sing. Close my eyes and open them again. The first line is clean, so I grasp home. There's that thought of reborn, being dipped in the water, and understanding the rebirth, baptismal.
All right. I honestly would say that was a wonderful comment because I'm sure it was, but I didn't hear it over my
you
coughing.
You weren't listening.
So. In my defense, I was coughing. So, yeah, no, I was not listening. But I know you, Rex, and I know you always make amazing comments. I'll just be honest that I didn't hear it. But we'll go ahead and fit one last read in. And this is Fire is Burning, Who Can Abide by Sky Poet 40. And Rex, go ahead.
Fire is Burning, Who Can Abide? By Sky Poet 40. The fire is burning. Will you turn out as gold, silver, or bronze? Or will you be wood, hay, or stubble, burning up and turning into ash? Defining and hopefully returning, sometimes feeling like a pawn, covered by immense trouble from all the whiplash. While their bodies yearning for the silence of a new dawn, ensuring they hit the daily double, as the ocean waves begin to splash, dousing the fire with sauternes from cloudy drops, a beautiful swan, no longer seen double, claiming to be bold, even brash. Broken and shattered, torn and tattered, polished like a golden platter, now filled with spiritual matter, the brain of the humblest of men, revealing in their waking ken, fire now burning in their quill pen, for they have survived the lion's den. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex. I think this just had a really wonderful and unique rhyming pattern. Cause, you know, I really liked the lines that he did. The fire is burning, will you turn out as gold, silver, or bronze, or will you be wood, hay, or still burning up and turning into ash? What I like about this general idea that I liked about this is that the whole idea that everyone who walks through a fire becomes a different creation. Some people become stronger, and some people crumble away like ash. And so, just an excellent observation, wonderful rhyme, and very well done. And, of course, I like to hear your thoughts.
That opening does hit on that sort of molding, as well as walking through the fire in gold, silver. That hits on actually molding it because you can't pound it. The bronze you do pound into something that's workable. Wood, hay, or stubble, that does turn into ash if you burn it hard enough. And ensuring they hit the daily double as the ocean waves begin to splash. That was a nice line. So was the next one, dousing the fire with sauternes. Sauternes, that's a wine used for cooking. From cloudy drops to beautiful swan, no longer seeing double cleanses, gold, even brass. And that hits on ugliness turned into beauty, and no longer seeing double clarity, tending to be bold, even brass. That might come with the fact that whether you turn out gold, silver, or bronze, how big are you wanting to be the winner, the runner-up, or the third placer? Broken and shattered, torn and tattered, polished like a golden platter, now filled with spiritual matter. So that also calls forth to the fact, which is it you're going to be, gold, silver, or bronze? And then the brain, the humblest men revealing in their waking ken, lion now burning in their quill and pen, for they have survived the lion's den. Now that hits on quite a note, considering I like the thought, run with men, ken, pen, and den. There's a notation actually being fine out burning in their quill pen, wise. Survived the lion's den. There's that thought of, what's his name, Daniel in the lion's den.
Yes.
Knowledge. And that thought about the humblest of men is actually understanding oneself and being humble in the moment and not looking to be gold or silver and maybe walking into the fact that brass might be the better object as it is. It does not hold itself up to a worthy note of worth as in gold or silver.
You know, I really liked that. That you brought up the being humble. The idea of humbling yourself in the moment and not being full of yourself. So that comment I definitely heard, and it was very well said. Wonderful show, Rex. Thank you very much. We have three carryovers. Kate Heartless, Eric Svensson, and Self Rise and Mojo, and I will find a show to put them on. And
right.
Let's go ahead and wrap things up.
I think you just did.
Okay. Well, I guess I did. Well, I'll go ahead and just say join us later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for, Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. And thank you. To Catherine, to Lynn, and to Salwa, and of course to Phil for everything she does behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. And of course, thank you to you, Rex. Have a good night.
All right. Good night.